Kate Chisholm tells us it's 500 years since Martin Luther pinned his 95 Theses to the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg, sparking what would come to be known as the Protestant Reformation. His superficial complaint was against the corrupt practice of indulgences, but what Luther, a professor of theology, really wanted was for God to be made accessible to everyone, for worship to be more intimate, more direct, and in the vernacular, not Latin. We think of him now as a man of the text, she says, who believed that faith was so important, its meaning should not be withheld by the priesthood or clouded by that dead language. So why focus on Luther as a musician? Chisholm asked the Reverend Lucy Winkett, rector of St. James, Piccadilly, who had prepared a radio program for the BBC titled A Square Dance in Heaven. Winkett, a former professional singer and choral scholar who has been singing Bach since she was a child, says she was really interested in Luther as a musician because everyone associates him with words. But much more significant was the way he transformed church music, using it to help people understand that God was with them and for them. He recognized, says Winkett, that music is the language of the human spirit, and because of that, he got everyone singing in Saxony. 4 hours of music each week was introduced into the school curriculum, and choirs sprang up in every town. Music, she argues, was at the heart of the Lutheran Reformation. Luther famously said, when people engage in music, singing in four or five parts, it's like a square dance in heaven. This leads her to wonder whether Bach would have created his St. Matthew Passion without Luther. In the radio program, she travels to Eisenach in Germany, to the church where Luther was once a choir boy, followed coincidentally 200 years later by J.S. Bach. As a chorister, the young J.S. would have sung hymns and metrical psalms written by Luther, both the words and the music. Lutheran melodies are threaded through Bach's work. She goes to see the first Lutheran chapel, which was built at Torgau, close to Wittenberg, in 1544, where she discovers that the altar was positioned at the east end, as is traditional, but above it was placed not the crucifix we might expect, but a massive organ in full view of the whole congregation. Every member of the congregation participated in the service by singing the hymns and metrical psalms. This meant that for the first time, women's voices were being heard in church. As a boy chorister, Bach would have begun each day at 6 a.m. by singing something written by Luther, but, explains Winkett, his musical genius then turned the melodies he grew up with, such as Luther's hymn on a text from Romans, "The Spirit gives aid to our weakness," into choral motets whose harmonic complexity reflects the deeper meaning of the text. Luther's melodies are often very lively, syncopated, like the rhythm of life. You can imagine running along to them in the gym. Bach, in contrast, forces you to stand still, to be in awe of the music and its ambition, inviting us individually, through the music, to contemplate the mystery of God. It's like a sermon delivered through music. All that from Kate Chisholm, writing in The Spectator, April 2017. Chisholm is making the case for the centrality of music in Luther's efforts for reform, and she's also giving us a sense of Luther's musical legacy, specifically in the case of Johann Sebastian Bach. There will be a concert program this Sunday afternoon in Bethlehem titled Luther and His Legacy, opening with Luther and closing with Bach. The performance will feature the early music ensembles of Moravian College, under the direction of Dr. Larry Lipkis. Dr. Lipkis is professor of music and composer in residence at Moravian College and a member of the esteemed early music ensemble, the Baltimore Consort. We had a chance to speak by phone with Dr. Lipkis about the music to be shared on Sunday and the early music programs at Moravian.
We've had, ever since I arrived about 40 years ago, we've had several different early music groups because it's one of my passions. we have an ensemble called the Collegium Musicum, which is essentially Renaissance music, and that is a mixture of community alum and college students, but they only rehearse in the spring, and they combine with all student groups for a big student concert. That's what we're celebrating, Monteverdi's 400th anniversary last year, with all those groups. In the fall, we just do a program with the student groups alone, and the Monteverdi singers, the Baroque Ensemble, and now the Krumhorn Quartet as well. So some of these students are involved in music education. Some want to be performers. Some are just non-music majors but enjoy early music. So it's a kind of a mix of people. Some might go off to do workshops in early music later, or they might possibly go to graduate school to specialize in early music.
You all recently celebrated a big anniversary of Claudio Monteverdi, and now it's Luther's turn. Tell us a little bit about him, because he was a composer himself.
He was. He played the lute. There's a famous picture of him playing lute, surrounded by his family, singing from a hymnal. He was evidently a fine lute player. He himself had a fine voice. He also insisted that anyone who was going to be in the clergy also could sing, and people in the Lateinschule, the Latin schools that he established, were required to sing and study music for 4 hours every day. So students had to spend almost half their day with music. Music was extremely important. He said, "Music is a gift and largesse of God, not a human gift. Praise through word and music is a sermon in sound. And next to the word of God, the noble art of music is the greatest treasure in this world." So it was extremely important to him, and he really put his actions where his words were. He himself was a fine musician, and anyone who wanted to teach, be a Lutheran pastor, had to be a musician.
And so really what you've just told us is that it was not, in terms of the putting forth of the Reformation and its taking hold in the society and culture and the days in which he lived, that music was not window dressing but essential to the spreading.
It was essential, and this is Luther's great achievement, is to not only make music available and accessible to the common folk, and that was very important. It wasn't just something for the nobility, but he really wanted to write hymns that everyone could sing, and he did. He was very successful at that. But he also championed what you might call the more refined polyphonic composition, the art music, based upon the hymns and other celebrations of sacred texts. And so people like Schein and Praetorius and Bach followed his instructions and wrote masterful polyphonic creations based on his ideas. So he helped in two worlds, in the world of the common folk, to get them to sing hymns in the vernacular, in their own language. And also he opened up the floodgates for these wonderful, elaborate polyphonic compositions that we find in the early and late Baroque periods.
And so when people are in pews around the world these days in the 21st century and pick up a hymnal, that's largely something to do with what happened there in the 1500s.
Absolutely, it is. Really, a lot of the other reformers were not as enamored of music. Certainly Calvin was not, and Zwingli was not. So Luther really helped promote the importance of music to the service and to theology.
You're always so good, Larry, about giving us context for the particular theme or composer you're featuring. And in this case, it's intriguing to think about what might have been taking place at the time that Luther was putting forth these theses.
Our program is called Luther and His Legacy. And what we're doing is actually exactly what you're describing, at least in the first couple of sets. We want to provide a context for Luther and look at the music of his time. In other words, what was actually being performed around 1517, so as this is the 500th anniversary of the beginning of the Reformation. So we are actually beginning with his signature hymn tune, Ein fester Burg ist unser Gott, and that is kind of the Marseillaise, you could say, of the Protestant Reformation, almost the national anthem. And then we are going to go right into a setting of that by his friend and compatriot Johann Walter. And he was the one who edited the first Protestant hymnal. That's in 1524. So we're looking first at Luther's hymn tune itself, which is interesting because it's not quite the way we know it from the Bach cantata and other settings. It's rather syncopated and somewhat jazzy. It's a very interesting setting. And Walter actually uses that a little bit in his setting. He puts it in the tenor voice, and he swirls some contrapuntal lines around it, which is exactly what Luther was urging people to do. He wanted to write both simple tunes that the congregation could learn in the vernacular, but also he encouraged composers to write counterpoint around these tunes, sort of embellishing them, and he considered this to be a great way to serve God. He felt this was like creating a square dance in heaven, as he called it. So we're going to start with those two pieces and then look at some pieces by composers that Luther himself admired. These are the Catholic composer Josquin des Prez and his Flemish compatriot Heinrich Isaac, who, by the way, died in 1517, so it's almost a commemoration also of his death, as well as the birth of the Reformation. Luther wrote quite a bit about Josquin. He admired his music. He hoped other composers would emulate his music, and that's exactly what Walter does. So we're performing a motet based on Psalm 72 by Josquin des Prez, and then a movement from a mass by Heinrich Isaac based on folk tunes called Missa Carminum. That's our first set, and then we're going to move into the secular world, because there was a thriving secular society, of course, during Luther's time with dances and songs. So we're going to look at some of those with the particular emphasis that Luther famously said, "Why should the devil have all the great tunes?" Meaning that sacred music should be just as singable and approachable as secular music. He encouraged composers to look at secular music and basically refit it with sacred texts. So we came across a tune from the middle of the 16th century called Ola E, by an anonymous composer. It's a tune which already comes fully equipped with four-part contrapuntal writing, and this is basically the template for the famous Christmas hymn that Michael Praetorius then wrote in around 1612, so maybe 50 or 60 years later, called Salite. So he took the words Ola E and turned it into Salite. So it's basically singing psalms in honor of the newborn, the Christ child. So it's a really interesting example of taking a secular tune, which Ola E is basically a very innocent little pastoral song about a shepherd, a shepherdess, and a cow. And Praetorius takes it and doesn't really do much with it. He tweaks the rhythm a little bit, but he represents it as a sacred work, which has lasted today. It's a very familiar piece. You can hear it in shopping malls today, the Salite Unigenito, a lovely piece. And it's interesting to hear its origin as a secular tune from the middle of the 16th century. And then we close out the first half back to the world of Praetorius, some early Baroque Lutheran composers. And I picked a somewhat alliterative trio of Schein, Scheidt, and Schütz for fun. But these are important composers, and Scheidt wrote quite a bit of organ music. And with this piece, we're going to feature this organ that we have on loan from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's by Samuel Green, made in about the year 1795. And he himself lived in the era of Bach and Telemann, so it's not exactly the Baroque period, but close to it. It's a pump organ, and we want to show it off, so we're performing a setting of Scheidt's piece, Vater Unser im Himmelreich, basically Our Father Who Art in Heaven. And we have then a piece by Heinrich Schütz, who is, I think, the most important Lutheran composer before Bach. Some people call him the Brahms of the Baroque because his music is so rich and lyrical and evocative. It's an absolutely gorgeous piece, O Jesu Nomen Dolce. And then we finish the first half with a secular work by Johann Hermann Schein. Schein wrote lots and lots of sacred music, but he also was very comfortable in the secular world. And this is a piece called Ihr Bruder, lieber Bruder mein. So it's basically a song celebrating brotherhood and friendship and, not to put too fine a point on it, drinking and dancing and jubilation. And so that's how we will end the first half. And that kind of takes us from Luther's own world, sacred and secular, into the world of the early Baroque. And then after an intermission, we're going to focus on two of the best-known Baroque composers, Telemann, who died in 1767, so it's the 250th anniversary of his death, and we're going to start with an instrumental piece. Many people know Telemann only as an instrumental composer. He was an extremely prolific composer in the instrumental world. Not only was he a composer, but he was a poet and a gardener and really a fascinating person in his own right, extremely prolific. A lot of people don't know his vocal works, so we're going to do a lovely aria from one of his Advent cantatas, and then we'll follow it with a setting of Ein feste Burg, the famous Luther hymn. And this is a beautiful polyphonic setting where the melody is in the soprano, easy to hear, and some beautiful contrapuntal lines underneath it. And then we would be completely remiss if we didn't do anything by Bach, so we're finishing the program with the final movement of Cantata 80, which is just a four-part setting of the fourth verse of Ein feste Burg, Luther's hymn, and then we're concluding with the final movement of Bach's Peasant Cantata, just to show Bach had a secular side as well. And this is a really fun, rollicking little piece. The words basically translate as, let's follow the bagpipes down to the tavern. So this is a fun way to end the program, and we don't have a bagpipe, but we do have a quartet of crumhorns, which is the next best thing to a bagpipe, because crumhorns are a double reed, buzzy instrument. They sound a little like bagpipes. And this group has been together now for about a year, year and a half. They will be an integral part of this performance. We have actually three student groups combining together, the crumhorn quartet, the baroque trio, which is flute, harpsichord, and organ, and cello, and then the Monteverdi Ensemble, a group of singers, five singers. So in a nutshell, that's the program. It is Sunday, November 5th at 4 p.m. Originally, it had been scheduled for 7, but I want to make sure everyone knows it's not at 7, it's at 4 p.m., the afternoon of Sunday, November 5th. And it's in Pater Hall at Moravian College up on the second floor.
Dr. Larry Lipkus, professor of music and composer in residence at Moravian College, a member of the esteemed early music ensemble, the Baltimore Consort, speaking with us about a program titled Luther and His Legacy, an early music concert with the ensembles of Moravian College, the early music ensembles, this Sunday, November 5th at 4 in the afternoon at Pater Hall, and again, that's in historic Bethlehem. And for more information on the web, moravian.edu, moravian.edu. And because of a shift in the parade for Veterans Day, Dr. Lipkus reminds us that you'll need to pay attention to the roads that are closed, and you'll still be able to get to Pater Hall, but you'll need to be aware that there will be perhaps some detours because of the Veterans Parade 2017 in Bethlehem. An early music concert, Luther and His Legacy, this Sunday, November 5th at Moravian College in historic Bethlehem at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Pater Hall. It will feature the early music ensembles of Moravian College under the direction of our guest today on Art Scene, Dr. Larry Lipkus. For more information on the web, moravian.edu, moravian.edu.